Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, babe. Girl, I don't know why I can't get enough of your love, babe.
Barry White made the ladies swoon with his deep, soulful voice. Maybe it'll work for blue whales, too. I'm John Schaefer with a musical look at the animal kingdom today on Soundcheck. We'll look at singing whales and critters on the opera stage. And then later, West African guitarist Lionel Luecke on traveling from West Africa to major jazz stages. But first, in oceans around the world, blue whales are changing their tune. The call of the world's largest creatures is a half octave lower than it was in the 1960s. But why? Why is this changing behavior happening? One theory suggests that whales are changing their tune to find love. This is the latest installment of Sing Out, our weekly series on singing, and joining us is Dr. John Hildebrand, professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, where he studies the sounds of dolphins and whales. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I do occasionally like to try and get my mind out of the gutter, but with these whales singing, does it all come down to mating?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess some people say it's all about sex, but, you know, certainly there's a, you know, the singing is done by males, male mm-hmm. blue whales, and there actually are probably two goals. One is to attract the females, in other words, to project a sound that will bring a female over and you know, hopefully lead to some mating. But the other reason could be to repel the rival males. Mm-hmm. In other words, to project a sound that lets the other male know that you're there, and, you know, instead of actually having some sort of conflict, you know, we'll stay away.
All right, now these are things that would have been bred into these animals for, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. Why would those songs, I mean, they're still looking for mates, they're still marking their territory and trying to repel the other males. Why would their songs suddenly be so much deeper in the span of 40 years, a blink of an eye, evolutionarily speaking?
Yeah, well, we have scratched our head over this, you know, since we discovered it. We found the effect about 6 or 7 years ago, where we were looking at data off the coast of California. We had continuous recordings we'd made, and we had to train our computers to find the calls, to find these song calls. And every year, we'd have to shift the computer algorithm down a little bit in pitch to find the call.
In other words, the computer needed to have some sort of sonic filter to be able to find the right noise in amongst all the other noises you were taking.
Exactly. You make a replica of the call, and you say, go out in this recording and find every time there's a sound that's like this. And we had to shift it down a little bit in pitch every year. And so we're scratching our heads saying, you know, what could lead to this? And so we went through a whole series of hypotheses. You know, for instance, we know that the ocean is warming, and so could that warming effect be changing our perception of the whale sound? And we realized that wasn't a large enough effect for mm-hmm. what we're seeing. And we thought about ambient noise. You know, the oceans are getting noisier with ships and, you know, other, you know, there's more activity out there, human activity.
Human activity, right.
Yeah. And so, but it turns out that most of the noise from humans is at low frequency. It's at the very lowest frequencies, you know, well below, 50 hertz. And if the whales are shifting down, they're actually shifting into the area where there's more noise and not less noise. So that didn't make sense. You know, they would be shifting up instead of down as the noise is increasing. So eventually, you know, when you think about these large baleen whales, you can't avoid the fact that they were hunted almost to extinction just a few decades ago. You know, starting around the turn of the century, you know, in the 1900s, when there were mechanized ships that could go out and deal with these large animals, blue whales became the primary target for commercial whaling. And the populations were taken right down to, you know, a few percent of where they had been. And so everyone realized this was not sustainable. In fact, there really weren't enough whales left to justify a commercial whaling industry. And so at that point, there was a body called the International Whaling Commission that made an agreement for a full moratorium on whaling, especially blue whales. Mm-hmm. And as that came in the 60s, you know, with protection, we think that the animal populations have been recovering. And where we have good data, we see, you know, some level of recovery. And so that is where we said, well, it must have something to do with the fact that the populations are coming back. There are more whales now than there used to be 40 years ago. The first recordings we have are just about the time when the animals were maximally depleted. And then, you know, now we have recordings where the population should have grown.
All right. Well, let's actually, John, as long as you mentioned some of those early recordings, we have one from 1964. So this is a pretty grim time for the blue whale population, right?
It would have been just about the minimum.
Okay, so this is what a blue whale off of in the waters off of New Zealand sounded like back in 1964. All right, now 1997. Same species, it's the blue whale, and again in the waters off New Zealand, and the call much lower this time. All right, again, we're speaking with Dr. John Hildebrandt, professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in San Diego. He studies the sounds of dolphins and whales. And so are you suggesting, John, that maybe it was that 1960s recording that was the anomaly, that they were actually singing higher than they normally would because there were so few of them?
Yeah, normally being, you know, if you allow them to expand to the carrying capacity of the ocean, you know, where, you know, if you take away the hunting. And so in the 60s they were really depleted, and it's not that they've come back. I mean they've probably come back a few percent, or you know, some fraction of where they will ultimately. You know, they're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. They're still endangered species, but they've, you know, the populations we think have been recovering. And so now we have to construct an argument, and this is where it gets controversial, about why that would be, that they'd be lowering their voices as part of this recovery. And one of the things that that comes into play is that if you raise the pitch of your voice, if you have a fixed amount of air in your lungs and you raise the pitch of your voice, you can actually make a sound that's a higher amplitude. You can make a louder sound at high frequencies than you can at low frequencies.
So a soprano on the opera stage hitting a high C will be louder, you know, at the top of her range than she would at the bottom of her range.
Absolutely. And that's just a matter of how much air it actually takes for each cycle of your tone.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing to think about here, though, is that in the ocean, the sound propagation is so efficient that there's absolutely no penalty for raising your voice. Usually, most people think about higher frequencies being absorbed by the media, you know, more rapidly. But in the ocean, the propagation is so efficient that it's not a factor.
So there was
no penalty for raising their voices to this higher pitch. And what it meant was then they could project to a greater distance. And so when the soup was really thin with animals, when there was a low density of animals, it's more likely that others would hear you, you know, either the girls that you're trying to impress or the mm-hmm. boys that you're trying to repel. And so then it raises the issue of, well, why would they ever want to come back down if more people will hear you if you scream at a high pitch? You know, why not just stay up at the high pitch? And that must have something to do with preference, you know, with the actual function of the song in terms of attracting the mates. you know, or repelling your rivals. And so this is where we get into sort of cross species, you know, preference. And in fact, there's good data for humans that females are more attracted to Barry White than they might be to you or I. I hate to say it, but
it's
know,
a bitter truth, John. But yes, I guess we have to agree. So basically, given the opportunity to lower their voices, to stop shouting, as it were, the male blue whales will do that because the lower voice suggests to a distant female, I'm really large and really good mating material. Is that
exactly?
Okay.
That is exactly it. And it's that I am fit for breeding because I have a lot. I have a large body. I have a lot of air in my lungs, and I can really belt it out. And it may be that the only way to assess the size of the animals, because if you're sitting at one end of the whale and trying to see the other end, you know, the it's actually not almost not possible to see that far. We're talking about, you know, as much as 90 feet away, you know, that
in deep water.
So the best way to actually assess the size of the animal is just to listen to the song.
And will you, John, be listening to the song to kind of follow these animals in future years?
Well, we hope to, and we'll track this, and obviously it can't go on forever because you'll hit zero frequency at some point.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that when it stabilizes, then that tells us that the populations have recovered.
How low can you go? We will find out. John Hildebrandt studies dolphins and whale sounds at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. And John, it's a fascinating musical puzzle. Thanks for sharing it with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having me on.
And in the background, David Rothenberg, the naturalist, philosopher, and clarinetist, incorporating the voice of the whale in his piece called Whiteness of the Beast. Up next, we're back on land, and in fact, looking at animals who perform on stage. And coming up later, the West African-born jazz guitarist Lionel Lueke joins us with his trio to talk about his new album, Mwaliko, and to play live in our Soundcheck studio.